Welcome to Take Off, a Points and Miles podcast by 10X Travel. I'm your host, Travis, and today I'm joined with Emily and a special guest, Ryan. Ryan is here to show us that family travel with points, it doesn't have to mean planning 2 years in advance. It doesn't have to mean limiting yourself. She is going to be such a fantastic expert for those of you interested in family travel. And like when we say family travel, it can expand to just group travel too. If you've got more than one or two people, a lot of times you can feel like the points game operates a little differently. And while that's certainly true to an extent, Ryan's going to show us that it's not necessarily as different as you might seem. Ryan is a longtime 10X reader and mom who's really just become a master at all things family travel, whether it's last minute award travel, premium cabin, spontaneous pivots, and just the inevitable travel mishaps that happen. If you've ever felt like points only work if you're single, solo, or trying to plan something a year or two out, Ryan's here to show you why that's not necessarily true. So Ryan, welcome and thank you for joining us today.
Thank you. Thank you guys for having me.
Yeah, so welcome.
We always like to start this off with a little icebreaker. So hopefully not putting y'all too much on the spot, but I'll keep it easy today. If you could go anywhere with your family tomorrow, so talk about last minute, no planning, just go, where would you go?
Probably somewhere in Southeast Asia, you know, maybe Thailand, maybe Vietnam. That's been on my list for a long time. I love the beaches. My kids like to be go, go, go. So anywhere we can kind of mix the two and have some adventure, you know, that's exactly where I'd head to. And the food. I'm a foodie, so I want to go eat all the food.
Can't overlook the food.
No. Oh, that's a good one.
It's a good one.
I don't know what I would pick. Japan. Mostly because there's no snow here, so hopefully there's some there. I don't know where it all is this year.
And it's January right now, so you are itching for some snow.
Yeah.
I'm ready. And me.
Oh. Well, I'm not too much of a snow person. I like that Southeast Asia idea. I'm a beach bum through and through. Family travel-wise, I'd go to Aruba. I haven't been with kids, but when I went with my wife a few years ago, I remember just how calm the water was because all of the resorts are on the west, north, south, east. I have to go through it in my head. They're all on the west side of the island, but with where it's located, the current always comes from the east. So it's effectively protecting that water. So makes for really calm. You're not too worried about rip currents or massive waves or getting knocked off your feet like you might in Hawaii. Just really felt like a great place to go with family. And it's something that we've been talking about, taking our nephews there for years. So
Nice.
Few different
what
answers.
Are they saying Aruba, like one happy island, something like that?
If not, they should.
That's what I thought, but could be making it up. I'm putting myself on the spot.
It's very pretty, and like doing. I've done the jeep ride. You can do that all over the island. Like the kids love that kind of stuff too.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
And it's like everything's close. It's a small enough island to where nothing's super far, so you don't feel like you're spending 2 hours just to get somewhere and then 2 hours to get back.
That is perfect. Awesome.
Well, before we get into some of your specific trips, Ryan, I'd really like to just kind of understand for our readers, what's the kind of framework that you go through when planning travel? You know, walk us through how you typically start planning a trip, deciding on options, the flexibility, must-haves, nice-to-haves, just like, what's that thought process like for you?
Yeah, sure. So typically, I'm usually working within the confines of a time frame. You know, my kids do traditional school, so we're not homeschooling or anything like that. I've got, you know, kids in travel baseball, which if anybody else out there knows, like it's incredibly time consuming. So I worked, you know, I kind of have to look at the time periods I have available and then work backwards from there. So a lot of times I don't have a specific destination in mind. I'm like, you know, okay, so, you know, I know a couple of the things we're going to talk about are over spring break. I'm like, okay, I have this week to work with. it's very hard for me to say, I'm just going to go here. I usually just look at that time frame and then kind of do some searches and see what's available. Like what can I do with my points, you know, for the least amount of points, but also, you know, the most convenient route too. Because if I've only got a week, it's not like I can, you know, go to Southeast Asia. For instance, I need more time. So being in Florida, I'm kind of lucky in that respect. We're so close to the Caribbean and Central America and some different places. That way I, you know, I can say, okay, let me look at this whole general area and see where I can find the best flight. And then usually once I find the flight, then I kind of work backwards and say, okay, now what am I going to do in this place? And work.
Yeah.
That all comes
later. Yeah.
So it sounds like it's less of kind of getting your heart set on a destination, trying to make that place happen, and just being open to where points are going to take you.
Exactly.
I think one of my favorite features of a few of the like award search tools is the anywhere feature, or like the explore feature on a few of them, is like you just put in airports you want to leave from and then type in anywhere or everywhere. I forget exactly how some of them work, but it gives you so many options and it really changes the way you think about being restricted to a time period, because now you can just see, oh, here are like a ton of options I can think about. And then maybe I'm not competing with everyone else on spring break who's trying to go to Cancun at the same time.
Exactly. Or sometimes like with the kids, I'll look and I'll either go to the airport website or I'll go to, I think it's flight.connections, and just see who has direct flights out of there, and then kind of go to those places and first and see what I can find to make it a little bit easier.
Yeah. So working around these schedules when, let's face it, everyone's wanting to travel, do you find you're often booking, you know, like we said, a year out or more last minute or somewhere in between, or it all just depends?
Usually all last minute. I have a really hard time making decisions, and, you know, I'll go back and forth to decide what is the right move for me, or, you know, sometimes I don't always know my exact schedule. So I always book things last minute. I think, you know, I'm talking 2 or 3 weeks before most of the time, because I can't make up my mind. I just know I want to go somewhere, and I wait and see what kind of deals I can get last minute. I think the only exception to that is like, you know, Emily and I were talking earlier, you know, we do a ski trip. We usually try to go every year, sometimes every other year. And that I will try to book out further just because it's a peak time and it's harder to get hotels during that time necessarily. So, and other than that, like I'm talking anywhere from a week to maybe a month beforehand is usually when I actually book.
Separate from just the actual technical side of doing that, I feel like one part that, like, as I'm thinking about last minute travel that's often missed, and maybe this is just me and y'all are going to tell me that I'm crazy, is also just that like emotional excitement. Like, I know when I first book a trip, I'm so excited to put everything together and figure out what we're going to do. But after like a few weeks, it kind of dies down a little bit until the trip comes, versus with this last minute, maybe it's just me and I'm crazy or something, like that feels like it would give me the whole time of excitement because it's all of this work. You know where you're going to go. Now you're figuring out what you're going to do. And then you just get to go and do it instead of wait for it to happen.
Yeah, exactly. And it keeps me from overanalyzing everything because, you know, if I have a trip that's booked too far out, I mean, I will continue to look at, oh, maybe I'll find this better hotel. Maybe I'll find this better. I will look and look and look for, you know, the entire 9 months ahead of time. Whereas booking last minute, I'm like, okay, I got to make plans and I got to make them fast. And there's no like second guessing myself. So,
yeah. If there's anything about points and miles people, it's that we are all over analyzers. So I think we're all in the same boat. Like it's a classic move of like the day before your trip. Is there anything else that I could book that's better? I'm looking to put myself through a little more stress before I leave on my trip. So how, when you're kind of booking last minute like that, waiting to see what pops up, how do you set yourself up from like a points earning perspective to make sure that you can book whatever shows up? Do you like focus on specific like airline programs or hotel programs, or is everything just transferable for you?
Very, very rarely. I'm always opening new cards. I'm always earning points in all of the different arenas. Obviously, flexible currency is ideal. But then sometimes, you know, I don't have, you know, I see a better bonus on, you know, something that's more hotel specific. So I kind of jump on that bandwagon. I like to have a lot of hotel branded cards for some of my local travel that I do. And, you know, I like to have a bank everywhere. So most of the time I never open a card with the trip in mind. Like, I'm literally just trying to open as many as I can to get as many points as I can so I can use whatever when I need it.
Yep. Yeah. I mean,
sounds like, and I think this is one of the things that people overthink sometimes, is sounds exactly like whether you're family traveling or, you know, even solo traveling, having that cache of flexible points is really what gives you that option, those options, and doesn't tie you in. Really, the difference is you might just need some more.
Yeah.
Yep. Yep.
When you're using these flexible points, how do you value like transferring to partners versus booking through a travel portal? Do you have a hard set, I only do it one way, or do you keep your options open?
Oh, I definitely keep my options open. I mean, like I said, I overanalyze everything. So I have to look what it's going to cost me to transfer. I have to look what it's going to be through the portal. Then I have to look at, you know, the various travel credits that I have through all these cards, like which one haven't I used yet? Which one can I use? What, you know, what makes the most sense? So yeah, definitely. I know a lot of people kind of back away from the portal with flights, but you know, as I mentioned earlier, I'm pretty close to the Caribbean and Central America. So I don't mind risking it in those situations. Like, I've had that where I looked at the points to points and I'm like, you know, it's so much more affordable if I just booked through the portal, you know, back when it was 1.5x, not this other thing they're doing now. Yeah. Versus if I were to transfer the points. So sometimes it just works. And then hotels, really, I have very little problem booking through the portal either. I know sometimes they don't always honor your status, you know, that it doesn't always connect. But if it's a place where I'm not really going to be sitting in the hotel the whole time, then I'm fine with it.
Yeah.
And it kind of sounds like you maybe don't get too hung up. And this is a common thing I see with newer people, is getting too hung up on the value of the points and getting the most value. Like, end of the day, like, you're doing this to travel, so it's nice to get the highest value possible, but sounds like you're not really hanging your hat on that and saying, we're not going to take this trip because we're not getting the best value. This is when we want to go and where we found the options, even if it's not the highest value possible. Like, the time you're going to spend with your family is going to be way more valuable than that.
Absolutely. And especially like when I'm booking for a family of four, it's a lot easier to find availability on flights for two people or one person. When you've got four, mm-hmm. I'm probably not going to get the best redemption if I want all four of us to be together. It's just not going to happen. So it just depends on what's worth it to me. And, you know, sometimes, you know, having my kids happy when we land because we flew in business class, worth it, points, even if it wasn't the best value.
Worth it, yeah.
Yeah, I think that's true even of adults. It's like, yeah. I will have such a better day when I land if I'm well rested. Like, I get so many more hours out of my trip than if I were to land somewhere and be jet lagged and have to go sleep it off in the hotel.
Yeah. I'm a much nicer mom if I'm well rested. So
Everybody wins.
Win-win. Interesting question for you. I have a hard enough time sometimes convincing people without kids to do this. So there's not a right or wrong answer. I'm just curious. Does your family ever split up onto separate flights? Like, you take one kid, your spouse takes the other kid because there were only two seats on two different flights?
So we have not gotten there yet. I am looking at travel for the summer, and I've been kind of trying to convince my husband to do that because, you know, I just am having a hard time finding the availability for four people. And he's a hard no, like, absolutely not. Because I think he just gives anxiety. Plus, I'm the one, you know, he's the airport prince, I should say.
Yes.
He doesn't know where he's going. He doesn't know, you know, which he's to have this. He knows nothing. So I think it makes him too nervous to split up. He's like, well, what if something happens? He wouldn't even know what to do if like his flight got delayed or if he had to change or, you know. Even my oldest today, when I was talking about this, he's like, oh, if that happens, I'm going with you. Like, don't.
Oh, yeah. I mean, on the same wavelength is like, it probably would make it more stressful for you, too, because you'd have to be like trying to help them through rebooking from maybe on your flight or in a different airport or wherever you happen to be when you're doing that. Yep. I've never split up just from my partner either, but Travis has done this fair number of times.
Do it all the time. Like probably 50% of our trips.
I didn't realize it was that high.
It might not be quite that high, but it's definitely pretty high. But the common objection tends to be the person who's into points understands the challenge of the availability and is like, let's try this. And it's the other one who's like, absolutely not. So speaking of, I'm knocking on wood for you, but things going wrong. One of your trips, you did have to make a last minute pivot.
Yeah.
why don't you I'll just let you tell your story in your own words here.
This was a fun one. We were celebrating my husband and I's like 40th birthday, and we were meeting some friends in Scotland, but being the spoiled people that we are, we decided to go a couple days early because we were gonna do business class. I didn't want to fly in the, you know, economy seats over there. But I ended up finding business class seats on Emirates from JFK to Milan on their the Freedom Route, and that's like one of my dreams. Like, I want to have a picture at the bar. Like, need to do it. Top bucket list thing. So I was like, we're doing this. This is how we're gonna get there. So I booked that flight. I was super excited about it. We were gonna go JFK to Milan and then spend a couple days in London and then meet our friends over in Scotland. Well, we were positioning, like I said, I'm from Tampa. So we were positioning from Tampa to JFK. And no lie, bags are packed, getting ready to walk out the door, and I get a notification that my flight from Tampa to JFK has been canceled.
Ooh.
So, obviously, start panicking. I think before I even tell my husband what's going on, I'm already panicking, trying to figure out, looking online to see how I can switch it to get to, you know, a different flight. And, long story short, I'm like, I don't think this is going to happen. So I call Emirates and I'm like, hey, how long do I have to cancel this flight? Can I still cancel it? They're like, yeah, we just need 6 hours notice before departure for you to cancel and get your points back. Okay.
That was probably cutting it pretty close at that point.
Oh my God, so close. But I was like, but I really, you know, wanted to make this flight. So I'm looking at options in Orlando, which is an hour and a half drive. But I'm like, they have bad weather too. I'm like, okay, well, I found a flight, you know, I can't remember if it was out of Newark or LaGuardia, but I'm like, okay, what if I get there and then we can drive? And like, but there's just so much risk there. And like, do I want to potentially lose all these points with Emirates that I have and then still not get to take it? Or do I need to pivot? So that's what I did. I had to pivot, and I ended up canceling the Emirates flight. Then I knew I had about 2 hours to try to figure this out. Well, actually, I wanted to figure it out before I canceled the Emirates flight. So I went back and like, okay, what do I have to do to figure this out? And I didn't have to get to Milan. I had to get to London at some point because that's where my hotels were for the next couple nights. So I'm like, okay, I just have to get to Europe. So I'm starting searching all over the place. Well, Virgin Atlantic has a flight direct from Tampa to London. And I'm like, there's no way. This is going to be insane. Well, sure enough, I lucked out, got on. They ended up having two upper class seats available. So did some quick points magic, did some transferring, and booked us on a flight that night from direct from Tampa to London on Virgin Atlantic upper class. And that was...
Oh.
What a way to save it.
And it was by the wire. So I think I booked it like six and a half hours before departure, just in time to call Emirates to cancel so I could get those points back, which are still sitting there, by the way. So I'm still waiting on that trip, but it's going to happen.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Yeah. Outside of not being able to take the Emirates flight, like it almost ended up more convenient for you.
At the last minute. Yes.
Yeah.
It was more convenient for sure, but you know, their fees are higher. So we did pay quite a bit more in taxes and fees to get over the pond.
Yeah.
Yeah. Did you have any like in travel insurance help with that? I don't know if it would or not, or if any of your insurance came in to help with that.
Oh, it did. Thank goodness. So we did have I was able to use the insurance that I had through one of my carts and went through that whole process. And I think I filed for basically all of the taxes and fees that I had to pay with Virgin. I tried to get them to cover some of the costs associated with what the increase in points that I had to pay for that trip. And then I also had the flight that I had booked, which was like an easy jet, no frills flight from Milan over to London. So I put that in there, and they actually, when all was said and done, I'm not sure how they did their calculations, but I ended up making $24 off of the whole trip. I literally made $4 on the entire UK trip that I did.
Wow.
That is amazing. Usually when we, you know, talk about points and miles saving people money, it's like travel for free, not travel for making money. That is awesome.
Well, and it's one of those, I always tell people, like, don't bet on that insurance, but if you've got to file a claim, put everything in there. Ask for everything, because the worst case is they're going to tell you no. The best case is you make $24 out of it, which... Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, and I mean, I had the wherewithal, thank goodness, of like screenshotting, you know, the text of the cancellation. I think the hardest part for me was I had to go back and get proof of why that initial flight was canceled, which was a little bit harder because they don't want to put that in there, the reasoning why in your flight. So,
yeah,
you know, but I had to, you know, I had all my confirmations. I'm, you know, as long as you have everything, all of your ducks in a row. And I think it took maybe 2 months from the time that I filed and then the going back and forth and everything else before they sent me that refund.
Well, I hope they didn't make it too painful for you, but it sounds like it worked out.
Oh, yeah, definitely worked out.
Well, that one, where did you stay during that trip? Any notable hotels that you liked?
Yeah, I stayed in, I'm trying to remember, I have some notes here. Where did I stay there? The Lost Property in St. Paul's. I stayed there for a couple nights in London. Now, this was also a last minute. This trip I knew about, like, I think I booked this one about 5 or 6 weeks before. So that was pretty advanced for me.
Oh, yeah.
I booked the hotel till a week before. So it wasn't like the best redemption in the world, but I used some Hilton points for there. And then we had a large group. So in Scotland, we mainly did Airbnbs with like a few little hotels mixed in. And then we ended up positioning over to Dublin to fly out. So we spent like a night in Dublin, which is fun, of course, and stayed, you know, right, I think, at the Chancery in Dublin, I think is what it's called, which was a really, really cute property as well. So all of those were with points, which is nice.
What I love about flying out of Dublin when you're coming back from Europe is it's one of the few international airports that has customs for the U.S. there. So when you land in the U.S., it just ends up being a domestic flight.
Oh, which is, you're in the clear. You just walk
up. Yeah, you're just
exactly.
Like...
Exactly. But I will say the downside to that was we had to clear customs. Well, the lounges over there, we flew JetBlue Mint back and they didn't have a lounge.
Mm.
And the Priority Pass lounges were all completely full. So I had the most sad little breakfast in the terminal.
Oh, no. How was the JetBlue Mint flight?
It was wonderful. The hard product was great, much better than I expected. But yeah, it was kind of disappointing not being able to, you know, have any of those perks before you got on.
Yeah.
That is a bummer.
Well, that one might be a bit of you succeeded. You still got your trip despite the, I don't even know how to quantify that amount of stress, but let's talk about a win. You know, you told us about a last minute premium cabin win to Italy that y'all took.
Yes. So this one, I actually, again, it was very last minute. I wasn't sure if I was going to be able to make it. And then last minute decided to go meet my mom in Italy for a trip that she already had planned. So I booked the flight maybe 7-8 days out. And that one was on American, I believe. And it was, I had to reposition to Chicago and then Chicago to Naples. And I believe, I don't remember exactly what I paid for that, around 70,000 miles for business class. And so I was pretty happy with that. And then my positioning flight to Chicago, I think, cost me about 15,000 United miles. And then, you know, got me over straight into Naples. Well, because like I said, I keep looking constantly and figure out anything's better. About 2 days before, I found an even better flight, and I was able to get it on the same itinerary. So instead of me having to position somewhere else, I actually found Tampa to Philadelphia to Naples for less points, 62,000. So I ended up getting some points back. I could cancel that United flight, got those back. And then I really like the idea of being on one itinerary because, you know, if anything goes wrong, then at least the airline's more likely to help me out. So really nice. But even the better part was, is because of, you know, having a position over Chicago, I wanted to leave a lot earlier. So not having to do that, I actually got an entire day, extra day in Italy. I was, you know, I was supposed to land at night and I was able to get there in the morning. So I got pretty much an entire extra day, which was really nice.
Yeah. Less points, more time. I'll take it.
Yeah. And I mean, obviously getting it all on one itinerary is certainly ideal, but sounds like despite the setbacks, you're not afraid of repositioning.
No, but I've learned my lesson. I will do it the day before the next flight.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah.
Learned That's my a, lesson.
It's a hard lesson to learn the first time.
Yeah. I will throw the tip to you. You mentioned about like flying into LaGuardia and driving to JFK. I've actually done that a handful of times, and it's not that bad, but it definitely is stressful, especially if you're like me and you're checking bags. So you land at LaGuardia, you're waiting for your bags. Inevitably, your bag is going to be the very last one. Then you wait for your Uber, and you know, they go the wrong way and traffic is the worst it's been that day. Like everything just always seems to happen every time, but it is possible.
Yeah. There's a lot of obstacles that could prevent that, I don't know, transfer from happening. Is that even what you would call it? Or is it a layover between two New York airports?
Don't they now have copter? Like you can just book the helicopter service to
There you go.
The Blade. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know that I would do it to Newark. That would stress me out a lot more.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Although I'm sure some New Yorker in the comments is gonna tell us about how I could just take the subway or the train or something and it's all super easy. And you're probably right. So next time, just instead of telling me that I could, just give me the exact instructions so that way I can absolutely do it that way in the future. So, you know, these obviously amazing trips. I love Scotland. It's one of my top countries that I always, when people ask me what are some of my top countries I've been to, Scotland is always on the list. Went to Italy last summer. I had to think about that because it's January and last summer was technically last year now. But what about like just some practical trips, especially with the family? Any like practical trips that y'all have done that were just such a good option for you, especially traveling with your family?
So, I mean, a couple, you know, come to mind. I've got, we just did a last minute trip to Charlotte to see my mom, which, you know, that's where a lot of my points go to. That's kind of a big part of how I got into this game because I have family all over the place. And when we decided to have kids, it was kind of one of those things like, you know, am I still going to be able to do this? Are we still going to be able to travel if we have kids? Should we not?
Yeah.
We were going to go visit her for the holidays. And, you know, it's always incredibly pricey to get up to Charlotte in particular for some reason. But I ended up finding this really great deal through one of my cards and it transfers over to Alaska. I know I can't say the card, but there's, you know, they've been in the news quite a bit the last week or so, I would say. And it was 4,500 points.
Oh, yeah.
Per person each way, which is like a no-brainer. It's, you know, hardly anything. So, I mean, that part was amazing. I'm like, well, okay, I'm definitely going to book that. It felt like I hardly spent anything on that.
Yeah.
It was really, really nice. And it was over the holidays. So, you know, I tend to do that a lot. Like, it's not just about all the luxury travel. It's all these little trips to see family. And then, like, you know, as I mentioned, you know, we were a travel ball family. So we have to take our 2-hour trip, you know, weekends over here, weekends over there, and just being able to not think about it and be like, okay, no problem. I have points. I can stay somewhere. Instead of making those drives back and forth, it's huge. It just makes our life, you know, that much easier on a daily basis.
Yeah. And how, with the travel baseball, how does the like hotel stays work when you have to travel like that? Is it like a group rate that you always end up having to pay cash for? Or can you use your points or free nights or anything like that to kind of subsidize it?
So usually not. I usually use my points or free nights. At least at the stage that we're in now. So my kids are still younger. They're not.
Yeah.
I know, upper leagues. We're kind of our own in that regard, which is good because then I get to choose where I stay.
Yeah. Okay.
Get to use those. I mean, honestly, I use the free night awards. That's a great perk because sometimes they're not always easy to use elsewhere, and that's the perfect place to use them.
Yeah, that's what I always think about. It's like some of the lower annual fee hotel cards. Like, I feel like it gets harder and harder to use those. But if you have, if you're doing a lot of like road trips or like staycation type of things, it becomes way easier to get the value out of them than if you're trying to plan an entire like international trip around one free night credit.
Exactly.
I want to do a little diversion from some of your trips. Something you said kind of stood out to me. You mentioned like travel before kids versus after. So were you doing points before you had kids or did you find it after?
Not really. You know, I had one domestic card that I had used for a while because it, you know, went to each of my parents and I knew how to use points on a very basic level. But it was a very strong decision, like a long decision with my husband when we were talking about having kids. I'm like, I don't know if I really want to because I don't think I can afford to continue to travel if, you know, we add a kid or two into the mix.
Yeah.
What's the real conversation? And I'm like, okay, well, then I need to figure out how I'm going to be able to make this work. And that's kind of when I started really researching and, you know, started learning some of the strategies and looking online. And then I think it was probably a year or two into it that I found 10X and like really, really dove into the course and kind of followed it very strategically and went all hands in. So
and you'd say like points and miles has given you the ability to like keep traveling the way that you were pre-kids.
I mean, more so, you know. I used to have to strategically think about every trip and make sure I had the funds set aside to do it. And, you know, if I'm going to my mom's or my dad's for this weekend, then I can't maybe necessarily make a wedding that I want to go to or that kind of thing. Now I'm like, okay, sure. Why not?
Yeah. Until you're going to too many weddings in 1 year and then you miss the excuse of like, oh, it's too expensive.
Yeah. Well, luckily I've kind of passed that phase of my life. Yeah. So I think most everybody's married off for the most part. Just a few here and there, but
Wow, that's just really incredible to hear how points and miles not only like solved that challenge for you, but actually let you travel more. And it might take, I don't know, I was going to say more planning, but with the last minute planning, maybe not even more planning. Yeah. It's you know, just really, really nice to hear how being intentional with points and miles, even with more travelers coming along, can continue to open up these opportunities for you and your family. That's just really cool to hear. So
yeah, absolutely. And I never thought I'd be somebody who could afford to travel in business class like I do. Not, you know, I don't make the mega bucks to be able to do that. And, you know, this allows me to, which is fantastic.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think we're all in the same boat.
I think that resonates with a lot of people. Whenever you hear about business class, and don't do it until you're ready to feel way too spoiled and not want to go back.
Yes, exactly. I have spoiled my husband. You know, before he's like, what are you doing? You know, he's definitely a quiet P2. And now he's like, well, what do you mean we're not going to have a bed? And I'm confused.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
But it just becomes my leverage with my wife. Anytime that she's like, oh, I have to change cards again. It's like, well, you don't, but you can fly economy. Amazing how aligned she becomes whenever
so
that
true.
Becomes the job.
I have another question, actually, before you keep going, Travis.
By all means.
When you do these kind of like last minute plans, are you like taking input from your kids or your partner in any way? Or are you like going to them and saying like, surprise, we're going to Guatemala?
Generally the latter. You know, I usually have like two or three options and I present them to my husband to just kind of like feel like he's included. But at the end of the day, he looks at me, he's like, I don't care, whatever you want.
Yeah.
But my kids, you know, they might take a little bit more convincing. Not that they, I mean, they're excited to go somewhere, but they want to know what what's in it for them. So I usually don't tell them until it's already been decided. And then I'm like, okay, this is what we're doing. And these are the fun things you get to do when we get there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep. I like that. Pitching them on a few options. That's fun.
Do you have to do that with your husband, Emily?
No, not usually. Well, the last like big trip we went on was Australia, and it was just like, surprise, we're going to Australia.
Yeah. I do the same because my wife and I are both very like analytical. Like I find a few options and then say, here's what we can pick from. Or before, you know, when we're thinking of our travel for the year, it'll be, do you want to go somewhere tropical or a city or Europe or Asia, and kind of like narrow it down at a high level. And then when it's time to book, it's here's what I was actually able to find. So it's not, we're trying to go to a specific destination, and if I'm not able to find it, it's just tell me the kind of trip you want and I'll work with that. It might not be exactly what you had in mind, but sometimes that makes for the most fun trips.
Yeah.
My husband and I have a ongoing joke because he was on a golf trip one time and I called him and I'm like, hey, so I found this availability for Switzerland over Christmas in like 6 weeks. And he was having a really good game. He's like, oh, okay. Yeah, that sounds great. That's wonderful. Cool. Booked it.
Yeah.
And then afterwards, he's like, did you really do that? I'm like, yes. So now anytime he goes on the golf, he's like, I'm not answering your calls. I'm not answering your calls. You can't surprise you anymore.
Yeah.
Well, little does he know that, you know, thanks to some of our laws, it's always cancelable within 24 hours of booking. So you can just book it and wait for him to get back.
He didn't know that.
Yeah. No, he doesn't. So if you have like a few options that you're presenting, what would you say is like usually the deciding factor? Is it like destination, or is it if one you can book business class, but the other destination only has premium economy, or one has a direct flight and another has a layover? How would you say you guys end up picking?
I mean, with the kids, it's usually what's the more convenient. We're going to look for, you know, obviously anything that is direct is certainly going to be ideal, or anything that has a shorter layover or one stop. You know, once we get past two stops, unless it's a really big trip, then, you know, that's probably not going to work for us, especially given the shorter time period. So I usually at that point do go more for convenience than anything else.
Are there any destinations you've been to specifically like with kids that just really surprised you, that maybe you weren't expecting to be, for lack of a better word, like the most family travel friendly destination, that ended up like standing out to you a bit?
Yeah. So I tell everybody, my first favorite family trip was Switzerland, and that was a huge one. But really the one that's kind of unexpected was Nicaragua.
Love Nicaragua.
Yeah.
Absolutely loved it. And, you know, obviously you hear a lot of things in the news and you're going to Nicaragua, you're taking your kids. Oh my God. I'm like, look, I've done my research. All the things, like, I feel comfortable, like, I'm gonna go. And it could not have gone better. Like, it was just, it was amazing. Like, we got a ferry, went over to Ometepe for a bulk of the trip, kind of like stepping back in time almost, because we just rode four-wheelers all around the island. And they there was a zip line, but it was a smaller zip line, which was perfect for my younger children, not like some of the big stuff that you see, you know, I don't know, Costa Rica or wherever else, all these swimming holes and the lake, and then the food, the fresh food right off, you know, right off the boat. And I think one of the best parts too is because tourism hasn't quite, at least the areas we were in, gotten there yet. There weren't like street peddlers everywhere, people trying to sell you anything. It was just so nice, relaxed, no screens, just honestly quality family time. And we had the best time.
Wow. I haven't gone with kids, but Nicaragua is actually one of the first trips my wife and I took together, and it's still, we have not been back. We've talked about it for a while, but really is just a place that absolutely blew us away. We didn't do Ometepe, but we did like Granada, so just the old colonial architecture too. Like, it does almost feel like you're stepping into Europe just in Central America.
Definitely. And you know, and was it Granada?
Mm-hmm.
I'm getting Guatemala and Nicaragua confused. A lot of those places too, in, you know, Central America, a lot of like the restaurants and places, they all have playgrounds, you know, even trampolines. There's always stuff for the kids to do. Like, I just feel like a lot of other countries put kids first. And, you know, something that we don't always do here. So we can enjoy our meal, we can walk around, but there's always stuff and things for the kids to do there. You know, these other countries, like, keep them in mind. And it's just nice and relaxing. We get to enjoy our time too.
Yeah, that's awesome. A number of trips that you've done, are there any trips that y'all are looking at, working on, planning right now, you know, whether it's to leave tomorrow or a few months from now?
We do have a couple trips booked. We're doing a wedding in Mexico, I believe, in May. We're going skiing in a few weeks, both of those, you know, booked on points, of course. And but right now I'm really trying to plan a trip to Asia. So, you know, I said in the beginning, if I could go anywhere, it would be Southeast Asia. And it's because, like, it's like all in right now, trying to find that availability for our family afford to go. And, you know, it's talking about splitting up. It's talking about if my husband's willing to do maybe premium economy instead of business class. And that's kind of been a struggle, but we're working on it.
What airlines or routes are you looking at for that trip? Anything you're prioritizing, or just whatever's available?
Honestly, whatever's available. I've got, you know, searches going right now for all of the big cities in Southeast Asia, coming from all of the cities over here, because I'm willing to reposition anywhere and, you know, see what happens.
Yep.
Whether you end up in Thailand, Vietnam, Indonesia, it's like they're all wins. They're all wins. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, like I said, I can't think of my mind wish. So, I mean, it might be where I find the availability that might determine where I end up going. So we'll see.
If you do end up in premium economy, I'm very interested to hear how it goes, because I've been saying on here for a while and still haven't done it, that, like, I feel like premium economy is such a great option and a great value, and how I want to do it. It's just every single time it's been an option, like, there has been business class and it's only like 15,000-20,000 points more. And Emily and Matt talking,
we just don't believe you. We just don't believe you'll ever do it.
Or that. Maybe you just don't believe me.
Yeah.
Well, but I've been looking, like, at the airline product and, like, the seeing if they have, because I did, like, a premium select on Delta one time, and they had, like, the leg rests. So not just, like, the foot rests.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Rest that kind of come out, and, like, that was like a game changer for me. So I'm like, that's kind of how I'm sorting through. I'm like, I would consider doing this if they have that same kind of situation.
Yeah. I feel like I really want to try it on a, like, daytime flight back from Europe, because I'm trying not to sleep already, so I just need, like, a comfortable enough seat. I said Asia. I definitely meant Europe.
No, you said Europe, I think.
Oh, did I? Okay. I think so. Well, in my head I said Asia, so.
Well, you're committed to it now. No sleeping on your flight back from Asia, sitting in premium economy.
Can I please do the Europe one first?
Tough luck. Sorry.
Well, good luck on that. Whether it's splitting up, or, you know, if there's just one business and three premium economy, as the person who manages the points, my vote would be that you get the business and the kids get premium economy, so they can be the ones to report back on it.
Yes, except they would have complete meltdowns if they were, you know, split up. So unfortunately, we're still at that age, we can't quite separate.
How do you navigate the hotels when you're traveling with your full family? Do you do separate rooms, or you try and find rooms that are large enough for all of you, or is Airbnb the way to go?
So I typically do hotel rooms. I mean, right now, you know, in the States and in much of the Caribbean, like, I have no problem booking a hotel room for the four of us, you know, two queens. I mean, my kids are still younger, that's fine. So we haven't quite had to deal yet with, you know, some of the restrictions of Europe. You know, we have a couple times, but we had a traveling grandmother with us, which I highly recommend. So we're able to put, you know, two over there, and it kind of worked out. So this will be an experience, and we'll have to see how this goes, you know, as I get older and when we travel to those countries that aren't, you know, conducive for families.
Yeah, it does make things a little more expensive if you have to double up on the rooms, that's for sure. Absolutely. That's when you get them their own loyalty programs and you make them start earning points.
Everywhere that I can, I've already done that. So they have a lot of award numbers in different places.
Oh, yeah.
But I will say, you know, even with the one room, one of the things that's kind of like one of our non-negotiables when we do travel is I really, like, we have to have a balcony because it's our way to escape once the kids go to sleep. My husband and I can go out on the balcony and enjoy some time and not be stuck in there having to go to sleep with them. So that's one of the things I always look for when I'm when I'm booking a hotel.
That's really smart. I hadn't thought about that.
Yeah.
Other than the balcony tip, which I think is phenomenal, are there any other tips that you would give to someone who's searching for more award seats, planning family travel, worried about last minute, like just anyone who's out there thinking that points and miles isn't for them because they've got more than two people, like what would you say to them and what kind of practical advice or tips would you leave with them?
Well, I mean, I'm fortunate enough that, you know, we're two and two. So I do have, it's nice that we each have a person that we're in control of. But, you know, realistically, like traveling when they're really young is the best because they're so much more accepting. Like people, you can take them with you anywhere. That's really, you know, not as much of an issue. I think for me personally, it just having the points makes everything just so much easier. And I've spoiled my kids when it comes to travel. You know, my son is like, wait, where's the TV? We don't have a TV. I'm like, no, not every plane that you go on has a TV. And we get to an airport and he's like, where's the lounge? Well, don't always have access to a lounge. But you know what? For families, that's a huge deal because a lot of times there'll be like a smaller area where they can kind of get their wiggles out before you get on a plane. If you have a picky eater like mine, it's nice to get some food in them from there or pick up some extra snacks before you get on that plane because he may not eat what's available. You know, there's a lot of little ways that we've learned to tackle that and keep them happy and, you know, continuing to want to travel.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Well, Emily, anything else from you?
No, I mean, I think you have a lot of great advice for people who might feel restricted by the points and miles game, like whether it's because of strict travel schedules or like availability or finding multiple seats. I think you've approached it from a really interesting way that makes it more doable. And I know not everyone's going to feel like they can just up and book a trip 2 weeks out, but if that makes things more affordable or more accessible or more convenient when you're traveling within like specific windows, I think that's a great way to do it.
Yeah. I mean, I think the biggest thing for me and, you know, what I want people to understand who are thinking about this is, you know, it really gives you options. It gives you flexibility. You know, I don't think I touched on this trip, but, you know, I had a trip for spring break that we were going to go on. We were going to go skiing. I know I talked about that earlier. About 2 weeks before skiing, my son broke his arm. So clearly, you know, this entire thing we had booked around skiing was no longer a possibility. So I canceled it, transferred those points, booked a completely different trip within 2 weeks beforehand because I could do that. You know, it's not like a cash fare where a lot of times it's not refundable. Like usually on most airlines, if you pick that second tier ticket, it's very easy to cancel and very easy to change that up. And that's, you know, that's one of the biggest things I've learned, and it makes things so much easier. So you don't feel like you're so committed. Cause I kind of have a problem with that, like a issue with commitment. Like, I'm not sure if this, but you know, that gives me that flexibility to change my mind or switch things up if I want to, or if things happen.
Yeah. Yeah, that is definitely one of the biggest perks of points and miles. Like, not only does it just open up so much more of the world to you, but being able to pivot in a situation like that where somebody's hurt and you can't go, or bad weather, like that's another reason too. Like, maybe there's no snow in Colorado this year, and your ski trip coming up, maybe you want to pivot. I don't know, but it's great to just, you know, be able to not be committed.
And I think the only other thing I would kind of add to that is like, I know, especially when I first started, it was like, I want to, like you were saying earlier, I want to get the most out of my points, make the best redemption. I want to fly in the best business class seat or first class seat. You have these big dreams. And like I said, I'm still trying to get on that Emirates flight and I've still got points there and I'm going to make it. But sometimes it's not always about that. You know, a bed is a bed, and even like a lower end bed can make all the difference. You know, I booked a Edelweiss ticket from, I think it was from Zurich. It was coming from Italy to Zurich, Zurich back to Tampa. And I had some better options out there, but being able to get off of a long haul flight and land in Tampa
and just go home.
Like, have 20 minutes home. Like normally I have some kind of, at least a 3 hour flight once I get off the long haul. I mean, that was huge for me. I'm like, okay, done. Mm-hmm. Sometimes convenience wins over everything.
Yeah, yeah, I think that's a mindset and a journey that I typically see people go through in points and miles is like, you obviously still want to do those aspirational ones, but sometimes you're looking at a nicer option and it's, well, yeah, but that's going to take me to Chicago. Then there's going to be at least a 2 or 3 hour layover, then another 2 or 3 hour flight home, or, it ends up landing at 2 a.m. versus the afternoon. And it's just, here's this other option right in front of me that's going to get me straight home where I can go have a meal at my house, even if it's takeout, it's food from home, and sleep in my own bed.
Yeah. Yeah. That is definitely a pivotal moment. And sometimes I feel like I'm there, and other times I'm still like, I'll do the crazy thing to fly whatever this. I know you're still in that boat, Travis.
I am for sure. But it's a balance for sure. It used to be always get the best. Now it's there's other priorities, and maybe that just comes from getting those experiences. But like, hey, Emirates now flies between Miami and Colombia, so
that's a short.
But I don't think it's.
Yeah. It's not long enough. I know. Funny. That is another mindset thing too, of like, if it's an elite cabin, you want it to be longer than 6 hours.
Yeah. You like what?
I'm like, to go to Europe, I'm like, can I go back over to Dallas to go over, or like,
yeah,
I want to fly out of the UK because then it's such a shorter trip.
Yeah.
Can I fly through Doha to get there? Sounds good.
it's those flights where you want to board and they say, we're waiting on the captain coming from another flight. Take your time, captain. It's okay. I'll stay right here. Don't you worry. Well, I think that's going to do us for this week's episode of Takeoff. Ryan, really just thank you so much, both from me and our audience, and just reminding all of us that family travel with points and miles doesn't have to mean chaos. It doesn't have to mean years of planning. It honestly, it doesn't have to be hard. I think that's my biggest takeaway that I'm hearing from you is it doesn't. Yes, the more people you have, the more challenging it is, but the same rules apply. Having some flexibility, some creative searching, and just that willingness to book first and set aside the optimizing factor of it goes a really, really long way, whether it's one person or four. You've really shown that family travel with points and miles is not some insurmountable hurdle, and that you really can do it. So thank you so much for sharing some of your stories, some of your crazy pivots, and just how you've made it work for you and your family and what it's unlocked for y'all. So
absolutely, and again, thanks for having me. I enjoyed it,
of course. And, so
I'm always learning, so I keep watching.
It's a journey. So for those of you out there, if you want to learn to do what Ryan's doing or just figure out where to start, you can sign up for My10X, our free tool that helps you track and manage your points across all of your programs. And that's where you're going to find our beginner course. Like Ryan mentioned, she did this for about 1 or 2 years, then found our course and was able to jump all in then. save yourself the 1 or 2 years. Sorry, Ryan. save yourself the 1 or 2 years and just start with our course right there to get a head start. I'm also going to give a plug here to Ryan. If you liked her stories and want to follow more, you can find her at TikTok, Instagram, I believe YouTube as well, at Roam Like Ryan. We'll have links to her socials in the show notes, so that way you can easily find them and follow along with her journey. So, and if you're part of our Facebook group, welcome. If not, and you're on Facebook, please join. It's the biggest Points and Miles community in the world, where you'll find stories like Ryan's every day. And I can just about guarantee you that there's someone with advice for your exact question. So follow Ryan, like and subscribe, leave us a comment, engage with this, share this with your friends and family, especially those with family who might hear you talk about Points and Miles and think, well, sure, that works for you, but it doesn't work for us. Ryan truly shows that is not the case. So until next time, happy travels.